clouds will stick with us. They're actually going to increase. Most likely, we're going to have some rain showers by tonight as well. It looks like a high today, just about 55, a low tonight down to 37. Tomorrow, the same kind of day, same as Wednesday, kind of a carbon copy. A high Tuesday, 48, Wednesday, 48. It'll be Thursday when we get a chance of snow showers, cloudy. A high near 30 degrees, a low on Thursday night down to 18. We're at 52, actually up to 53 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
Now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, hello there. Good afternoon. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Beautiful day today, although clouds will be thickening, and we've seen some clouds here and there, but sun still pops out once in a while. The temperature is already in the low 50s, a little bit warmer than the weather folks thought. We're not complaining about that, though, are we? Rain on the way tonight and then for the next couple of days. It's a book talk day today. This is something we do once a month. Most months it's on the fourth Monday. Sometimes we have to move it because of a holiday, but usually the fourth Monday. And we do it in cooperation with the library system of Butler County. Various public libraries throughout the county take turns selecting a book. And then a representative comes in and we talk about it. We review the book. The Butler Area Public Library took center stage this month, and Peter Best, the assistant director at the Butler Area Public Library, is with us here in the studio today. Peter, it's good to see you again.
It's nice to see you too, Dave.
You have chosen a book called The Water Dancer.
That's correct, The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Mm-hmm. And it was, as I understand it, the first book that Oprah Winfrey chose whenever she relaunched her Oprah's Book Club.
So, yeah, so it's one of her picks from this last year, and it's a pretty good read, I think.
It's a little bit difficult to classify the book. You can say that it's maybe a little bit fantasy, maybe a little bit magic realism, although I've read reviews that say maybe it's unfair to put it in that category.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I walked away from it feeling like you could probably give it a heavy historical fiction title. Historical fiction, but with just a little smidge of the fantastical thrown in there.
And it's the story of a young man, a slave, in Virginia, in the years before the Civil War. I don't think the year is ever specified, but it's antebellum. It's before the Civil War.
Definitely before the Civil War, but yeah, like you said, it doesn't really ever specify a year that it seems to take place. It also goes backwards for a while as we see him come of age. So probably a good 15 to 20 years, mostly before the Civil War era.
Mm-hmm. There are time jumps. And there are place jumps in this book, and that's where the fantasy comes in. We'll get to that as we discuss. The main character, the protagonist, is Hiram Walker. Tell us who he is, or Hi, as he's sometimes referred to. Who's Hiram?
So Hiram is the son of a slave. And again, interesting, something I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit more is how the word slave is not even really used in this book.
True.
But he is the son of a slave and his master.
He's biracial?
He's biracial. So he's the son of both. And he's special. He's something special. The same thing that you get with a lot of fantasy is you get a very strong, almost heroic cast member. And so he is definitely somebody who has some special gifts that almost seem preternatural with his memory. And that plays a lot into the main focus of the book, like you said, with a little bit of the time jumps and place jumps later. But he is somebody who has this special gift, and because of this gift, he is singled out from among the slaves that work on his father's plantation, to a point that it makes him feel special. And mm-hmm. almost for a while, as you read the story, you see that he wants to imagine that he's going to be treated better due to that.
He can remember just about everything. He has what we would, it's not a scientific term, but a photographic memory.
Right.
If he hears a story, he remembers it. He remembers all the details. He remembers all the characters. He remembers all the dates. Anything.
Yep.
He can do memory card tricks that amaze people. He can remember everything except his mother.
Except his mom. That's right.
So talk about that a little bit, Peter. He lost his mother. His mother was sold when I think he was 9. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So at an age where one would expect he would remember his mother.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
When I first started reading the story and realized this block that he had in his memory, I first thought, well, he must have been really young when she was sold.
Yeah,
I thought maybe 3 or 4.
Exactly. You would have an image or two maybe, but no other real memories of your mother.
Right, but then you do find out that, no, he was around the age of 9 when she was sold, and yet at the same time has no memory of her. And so for quite a bit of the book, that's you're in the same boat that he is, wondering what it is that has caused him this blockage of memory when everything else is always right at the forefront. Like you said, any names spoken to him, people talked about. The only knowing that he has of his mother is what he hears from other people. Mm-hmm. So he has heard descriptions of her, and he has heard stories of her. And so he has those memories of the descriptions, but not of her herself. So
his mother's name was Rose.
Rose.
Does she ever actually appear in any of the time jumps, or is it simply this memory thing?
So if I'm remembering correctly,
I don't think
she does. No. He sees her.
Has a vision.
He has a vision of her. Mm-hmm. But no, she never plays a part in the story. There's no time jump to when he gets to meet his mother again in the past. So
his father, and by the way, he always refers to his father, looking through my notes here, I think his name was Howell.
Correct, Howell.
Howell Walker. Even though he was the master,
mm-hmm.
the owner of the plantation, he never refers to him that way. He always calls him his father. I mean, he was his biological father.
Right.
But he never refers to him as master. In fact, as you mentioned a few moments ago, Coates never uses the familiar terms slave and master.
Correct.
How does he refer to these two different groups?
So, very interestingly, he uses the word the tasked for those who are the slaves, those who are owned, and those who are tasking in the fields or in the home. And then for the owners, he calls them the quality, which I thought was a very interesting choice. I felt like the tasked was an on-point decision of a word to call somebody who was a slave, somebody who was tasked to do something, or they, as he talks so often, they are under the task. But the quality seemed to be such a forgiving word. We all seek to have things of fine quality in this life. And so to choose those who have enslaved his people, to call them the quality, I thought was, again, kind of almost too nice, but understandable.
I was a little bit confused because, you know, one reference is a noun, the other is an adjective.
Right.
You know, quality is not a noun, nope. At least in the sense that it was used here. I mean, it could be a noun. But task, and by the way, that's a little hard to get on the radio. It's T-A-S-K-E-D,
right.
Tasked. People were given a job to do. They were tasked.
They were tasked.
And in this case, it was the slaves, whether they were working in the fields or in some other area. So, beautiful writing, by the way. Maybe you'll have a chance to read a couple of sentences here in the course of our discussion. Very evocative, very lyrical.
Very poetic.
Yeah, Coates has a way with words, that's for sure. I was a little bit confused early on because of the time jumps. I've read some other time jump works, and they usually, when they start a new chapter, there'll be a date. You
know, right.
It says, okay, now you're in the 1960s, before you were in the 1940s, or they'll tell you you're in a different place. No headings on the chapter here.
No, definitely not. He makes you work for it.
Yeah. So it starts out when Hiram or Hi is in his teens,
mm-hmm.
and he's driving a carriage. They had another name for it. I forget what it was. Chaise? I think. A chariot.
A
carriage. Horse-drawn carriage. And he's ferrying his brother.
That's right.
One of the other offspring of the master.
Yep, his half-brother, yep.
Yeah, his half-brother, different mother.
Right.
And he has been assigned to be his manservant. So
right.
He's driving him around with a woman that he has picked up at the local brothel.
That's right.
By the way. And I'm trying to remember the circumstances. Oh, there had been a horse race or something, right?
There had been. There had been a horse race, and they had gone into town, so a little ways away from where their plantation was.
Mm-hmm.
And they called it race day. It seemed to be a local festival, and all the quality would show up. And his brother was there, as well as supposedly to meet with the other quality and win at the races. It sounded like, you know, a lot of gambling going on, and having not done as well as he had hoped, had decided to visit the local brothel before heading home.
Not only that, but take the woman that he had paid for back to the plantation.
Back to the plantation, that's right.
So he's being driven, and there's an accident. What happens?
So, you're saying it's right at the very beginning of this book. That we are with Hiram as he's driving this carriage, and he begins to have a memory that he's not quite sure who it is or what it is, but he sees this woman and this fog move in, and as he's crossing a bridge and he's in the throes of this vision, the bridge collapses, and he and his brother and the buggy and the carriage all crash down into the river called the Goose, which is brought up quite often throughout the book.
The River Goose. And he thinks he's going to drown.
Yeah, yeah. He worries for his life. And it's brought up again quite often about the river being a very strong river, a tough river.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is astounded to find out that Hiram is able to get himself out of this river to save his life. But in the process, his brother dies.
Mm-hmm. And the woman is never heard from again either, so she
presumably died as well.
Yeah. Hiram had tried to teach his brother, his half-brother, to swim, and the guy never put himself to it.
Yeah, there was never a time in the book where you really feel like there's any kind of love loss between these two half-brothers.
He was Maynard, we're talking about.
Correct.
Was the brother's, half-brother's name. He was a goof, and he was referred to that way by the other quality.
Right.
The other plantation people, they knew he was a goof, that he was worthless and lazy and stupid.
Yeah. So having talked a little bit about this gift that Hiram has with his memory, this is what causes him again to believe that maybe he will be treated differently, that something will change. And that is compounded by the fact that his half-brother, who is supposedly the quality, has fallen short and doesn't seem to be able to live up to what his father needs him to in order to carry on this plantation. And so Hiram gets the terrible task of serving his brother in the aspect to prop up his brother.
When he does manage to get to shore and out of the swift current of the River Goose, he finds himself some distance away. Is this the first indication of place shifting?
It is. This is the first indication of there being something of the fantasy in this book. But even at this point, it's very ephemeral. It's hard to decipher what exactly is happening. And I think part of that is Ta-Nehisi Coates' use of the poetic language while he's describing what is happening to Hiram. You finish this section and you feel like, okay, he's safe, but I don't know how he's safe. And that's the point, because he doesn't understand it either. Hiram does not understand how he got out of that river. The last thing he remembers is his brother pulling him under. And so you don't know, and Hiram doesn't know. And I thought that that was a really great way to go about touching on the fantastical, but at the same time not giving away, not showing all the cards yet that early in the book.
We're talking about The Water Dancer, the first nonfiction work by Ta-Nehisi Coates, and it's the subject of our book talk discussion here today on It's Your Turn. And if you're joining us a little bit late, Peter Bess is here, the assistant director of the Butler Area Public Library, discussing The Water Dancer. We should indicate to our listeners where the title comes from. It's from these visions that he begins to see of his mother.
That's correct. He begins to have some visions of his mother, and every time he sees her, she is dancing with a jug of water precariously placed on her head in this dance that, as you read through the book, you find out that there's a very big symbolism and meaning behind this dance and for their ancestors. And so that's where we get that from. So
we've seen images of this in pop culture, generally depicted in third world countries, where women will be walking along with a water jug on their heads.
They've right.
gone to get water from a stream or a river, and they're bringing it back to their homes. There's also kind of a blue light that occurs every time he's about to have a vision of his mother and the water dancing.
Right. He talks about this this glow, this blue light, this glow that comes over him and just surrounds him. And he loses time. It's almost like blacking out, except he sees this blue light, he sees this vision. And then the next time he comes to, he's usually in a different place. And he doesn't remember traveling there.
So you turn the page, and you start reading, and you know, I read for, I don't know, 5 or 10 pages, and Maynard pops up again. I said, wait a minute. I thought Maynard was dead.
Right.
I thought he drowned in the River Goose. So were you confused a little bit by the time jumps early on?
I was real early on. Again, like you said, a lot of authors will give you those headers to let you know when and where you are in the story. I think that leans into this whole aspect of Hiram sometimes needing to guess what's going on in his life as well, that you don't know. You don't know where you're at or when you're at, I guess, mm-hmm. is really what you're looking for. Maynard shows up again, and pretty quickly you realize, oh, wait, but Maynard's a lot younger now. And then as Hiram shows up, Hiram's younger now. And you realize that you have also made a jump in time. Not in place. You're still on the plantation. But you've gone back now to Hiram being a very young boy, around the age of 9 or 10.
And he is just beginning to figure out that he has some special powers.
Right.
And it's becoming noticeable to others, including his biological father, who's the master of the plantation, the name of which, by the way, is Lockless.
I thought it was a beautiful name. I love that name. But I don't know if there was an actual plantation out there called Lockless. But what a beautiful name, I thought, for a home.
Big plantation. So the father begins to realize, and again, we're much younger.
Right.
That there's something special about this young man. And he decides that he's going to have him tutored.
Yeah,
by the same guy that tutors his other son, Maynard.
Right, exactly. He does. He ends up deciding to what at least to Hiram seems to be to point him out and to dote upon him as if he is his son. He's getting the same treatment that his half brother gets, and he's being tutored. And he realizes very quickly, I'm being tutored more than my brother is, because my brother doesn't seem to take much to learning or to education. But Hiram loves it. He loves diving into the books and learning to read and learning to write and learning not just that, but the history of his father's family. Mm-hmm. And it becoming to him his family, which lends itself to him daydreaming and believing that, again, for him, it will be different.
And this is when he first begins to entertain these notions, however far-fetched they might seem, that he might someday be the master of the plantation.
Right. Yeah.
Because his half-brother's so stupid.
That's right. He says, he thinks to himself, I'm the son my father really wants.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he would have rather Maynard be this son, but he's not, and he's got me, and so he is teaching me, he is raising me up to take over. But like we've alluded to already, not too long does it take for him to realize he's always going to be in his brother's shadow.
And there was some advice that he got from another woman. We'll talk about that in just a moment. We need to take a break, however. We're discussing The Water Dancer. It's a novel, and you might say a novel of magic realism or fantasy or sci-fi. I mean, mm-hmm. it's kind of nebulous in there. But anyway, it's been a very popular book, especially since it was chosen by Oprah Winfrey when she relaunched her Book of the Month Club. Ta-Nehisi Coates is the author, and we'll continue talking about it with Peter Bess here on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR, right after these words.
Do you know an incredible kid? Don't we all? It could be the neighbor who always mows your grass, or the youngster who collects food for the elderly at church. Maybe your incredible kid read 30 books over the summer, overcame a significant challenge, or started her own small business. Consider nominating your incredible kid in the Incredible Kid Contest, presented by the Butler Radio Network and American Natural. Every month, listeners can submit a photo and a brief profile story of what makes this nominee the perfect candidate for our Incredible Kid Contest. Each of the nominees must be 18 years of age or younger. Nominations will be accepted the first 2 weeks of each month, which will then be followed by 2 weeks of voting by you, our local listeners. The winner will be interviewed on the radio, recognized on the Incredible Kid Contest page, and receive lunch for two at American Natural. To learn more about submitting your incredible kid, go to butlerradio.com. As Albert Einstein once said, children are our most valuable resource. So let's recognize their successes and celebrate their accomplishments.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Welcome back. It's a book talk day today. The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates is the book that we're discussing, chosen by the Butler Area Public Library, and the assistant director of the library, Peter Bess, is with us here in the studio today. We're talking about the main character in this book, Hiram Walker. His mother, he's a slave in Virginia before the Civil War. His mother was sold. This happened quite a bit, but it began to happen more frequently because, and I didn't realize this, that the tobacco industry was dying out in parts of the South in Virginia.
Right. They had killed the soil there.
Yeah. Well, they didn't know anything about crop rotation and that sort of thing. And they, you know, just growing tobacco year after year.
Right.
And it wasn't growing as much anymore. It wasn't producing as much. And many of the plantation owners and their families were moving west.
Right.
They called it, or Coates does anyway in the book, going out Natchez way.
Right. Selling the slaves to the South and going down to some of those different well-known or notorious slave markets mm-hmm. to the South.
But at any rate, his mother had been sold, and then he was kind of taken in and cared for, because he was only 9 years old,
right,
by another woman.
Yeah, and it's so interesting as well in the book. It's not even of her her choice. He latches on to her, having known her from living on the street, which they call the area where the enslaved are kept. And so he, knowing that she's on her own, she's probably more around like his grandmother type age.
Mm-hmm.
He latches on to her and moves in, and she begrudgingly allows it.
She's kind of a cross. Thina is the mm-hmm. woman's name. She's kind of cross. And then we find out the reason for that. Yeah. All five of her, first of all, her husband was murdered.
Right.
Big John. Yeah.
Yeah, Big John.
I'm getting to the stage where I don't want to get my names confused here. There's a ton of names in this book. And all five of her children were sold.
Were sold, that's right. And so, yeah, I can only imagine having to deal... I can't even imagine having to deal with that, and that being the case, to then all of a sudden worry about caring for someone else, because mm-hmm. how long are they going to be there?
That's one of the things that struck me about this book and the writing by Coates. I don't know whether you agree or not, Peter, but I mean, most people are familiar with the horrors of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the torture, the rape, the work hours, the inhumane treatment, and so on and so forth. But to look at this from a standpoint of how these slaves thought about themselves mm-hmm. is something that I really hadn't explored before.
Absolutely, no, I hadn't either. And to hear him through, to hear Ta-Nehisi Coates through Hiram describe the day-to-day, and really I feel like the emotional toll and the psychological toll that being one of the tasked took on them, like you said, was something I hadn't really thought about. You thought about the physical side of things, but really, especially with a character who can remember everything, to then also task him with trying to wrap his head around why am I being treated this way? Why are we being treated this way? Especially when he starts to see that he, at least compared to his brother, is much better. He obviously has the gifts that his brother, according to his dad, should have had. And to know that about himself, to be educated and to see that about himself, but to then still know that no matter what he might learn and what he might accomplish, he can't be anything more than a task.
And Thina warns him about this.
She does.
When she sees that he's getting this special treatment, where his biological father, the master of the plantation, gets him a tutor, same tutor that he's got for his other son, starts giving him extra perks. She tells him time after time, be careful.
Right.
You're not one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, she does.
You're not one of them. Even though he starts to dream about someday,
right,
taking over and becoming the master of the plantation. And then there are times later on when he thinks back on this and he said, "But how could I?"
Right.
How could I, as a black man, been lured over these other African Americans? That's senseless.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So,
but those are the
thoughts that
thoughts
he
that were going through his mind.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, again, he knew his dad.
He actually, now that we're talking about this, this comes back to me. One day, he gets called. He's at the big house, the plantation, the mansion, and his biological father calls him. I don't know, into the study or the living room or somewhere, and he thinks, oh boy. This is it. You know, he's going to tell me that I'm going to be the one that's going to take over, you know, and be the big boss. And instead, his father tells him, well, I've decided that, Maynard needs help, and I'm going to make you his manservant.
Right. Yeah.
And he's just crushed emotionally.
He's crushed, and at the same time knows exactly what his dad has been doing over the last couple of years, training him up not to take over, but to... Again, like I said earlier, prop up his brother to make it look like his brother was running this place when really it was going to be him behind the scenes the whole time. Mm-hmm. And to have had those dreams, to have heard what Thena said, and at the same time think he knew better, but then to have her words thrown back at him again, he was never going to be one of them, no matter how much he learned and what he could do.
Coates did quite a bit of research into the lives of slaves in that era and what it was like to be on a large plantation, and Lochless was huge.
Right.
I was intrigued by the way that the tasked the slaves could only enter the mansion through one entrance, and it was through a tunnel.
Right. Yeah, they call it the Warrens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It came up so that they wouldn't be seen.
Right.
They would just like magically appear, you know, whenever they needed to be waitstaff or manservants or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's one of those, we say magically appear, but also just as importantly for the quality, magically disappear.
Mm-hmm.
To do what they needed them to do, but to be seen as little as possible. And again, it's enough to... There's not a ton of books out there that have made me at times as happy, but also as angry as this book.
Do you have any quotes that you marked down that you can share with our listeners by this author?
I do, actually. So one of the quotes that I pulled aside fits in really well with kind of where we're talking right now. There's a portion of the book where Hiram is trying to grasp how it is that the quality could treat the task the way that they do. And so this is him speaking to himself, thinking to himself, "They knew our names and they knew our parents, but they did not know us because not knowing was essential to their power. To sell a child right from under his mother, you must know that mother only in the thinnest way possible. To strip a man down, condemn him to be beaten, flayed alive, then anointed with salt water, you cannot feel him the way you feel your own. You cannot see yourself in him, lest your hand be stayed, and your hand must never be stayed, because that is that the moment it is, the task will see that you see them, and thus see yourself. In that moment of profound understanding, you are all done, because you cannot rule as is needed."
Pretty deep stuff.
Very deep. Yeah. To know that they had to suspend this understanding that standing in front of them is another human being, and to say, nope, they're not, to decide that is not the case, is what they had to do in order to treat them this way.
I read some reviews of this book where some people were put off by this. They were, they talked about the plot moves along and then there's a pause and we're treated to an essay. by Coates. And then the plot stumbles along again. Well, I suppose if you didn't like the book, you could say it that way. But this man, this is his first fictional work.
That's right.
He is well known for writing essays.
That's right. His essays and his nonfiction works is what he's known for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you. I love that it's in here. I love that through Hiram and through his thought processes and through what he's learning about the world and himself and the quality, we get, I think, a bit of Ta-Nehisi Coates' voice in there teaching us, educating us, like any good book should.
Time moves on and jumps around a little bit, as we've said in this book. And the master, Howell Walker, realizes, I think it even says he's now in his 70s, and he realizes that he's beginning to slow down and fail, and, you know, what's going to happen to Lockless?
Right.
And he knows that Maynard, clumsy, stupid, dumb, awkward that he is going to need help. So he trying to hook him up with somebody.
Right, with one of the ladies of the area, one of the well-known.
Enter Corinne. Is it Corinne Quinn? Am I remembering that last name correctly?
Yeah, I believe you are, yes.
Enter Corinne Quinn. Can you tell us a little bit about this character? She's a widow, as I recall, right? She's eligible.
Corinne is eligible. And
she's very rich. She has another plantation.
She does. She comes from another family of quality in the area, and she is well liked by all the quality. And surprisingly enough, seems to take to Maynard, which Howell is very pleased about.
Shocked, to be honest with you. It's during this time that Hiram, our protagonist, our main character, begins to realize, what's he going to do?
Right.
I mean, you know, he's a manservant to this idiot. Obviously, his biological father has no better plans for him. He begins to think about trying to escape, to become a runaway slave.
Right, to find the freedom that he knows he will never find here,
mm-hmm.
and to leave for that. So he does. He begins to search that out, and to not search it out alone.
There's a love interest.
There is a love interest.
Yeah, Sophia. Tell us about Sophia.
So Sophia is another individual from my reading, slightly older than Hiram himself. She is what he terms in the book a fancy lady who has been chosen from the task, who has been set aside for his uncle, actually. I think it was Nathaniel.
Nathaniel.
Mm-hmm. And so he gets to know her as he drives her to and from Lockless to visit with Nathaniel on Nathaniel's estate.
And her job, quite frankly, is to have sex with Nathaniel.
That's correct. That is the task that she has been given.
Yeah. Sad.
Yeah, right. And to then see Hiram, who has learned so much and want so much more, and then he does. He falls in love with Sophia, and he wants that for her as well. He wants her to be free.
This is another interesting area where Coates gives us a bit of an essay, I guess you might say, because Sophia sets down the law to Hiram and mm-hmm. says, okay, I'll run away with you, but don't think I'm going to be yours necessarily once we get the freedom.
That's right. Yeah, she's not looking...
I'm my own person.
She's not looking to trade one master for another.
You're not going to own me.
That's right.
You know? And that sets Hiram back a little bit.
It does. I think he expected... I don't know if he expected just the fact that he would be the one to help her get out to be free, that she would then owe him something more than her gratitude. And it does. It takes him quite a bit aback. And we see him struggle with this for quite some time through the book.
I'm trying to remember. Has she had a child yet with Nathaniel, or is that does that come later?
That does come later, yep. So
another time jump.
Yep, later in the book for sure. Yeah. At this time, it is just her and him, and Hiram is trying to get her to agree to make this escape.
So, and by the way, folks, we're not giving away what happens here. We won't do that. If you're interested, you can read the book. But they do, in fact, run away.
That's right, they do.
Unsuccessfully, as it turns out.
Unsuccessfully. They're
captured in short order.
They are captured, and really for this story, that's when a lot of change really begins to take place. So far, we've followed Hiram on the plantation and thinking that maybe one day he could run this plantation or own this plantation, and now he really, what seems to me anyways, the first time he sees the life of the rest of the tasked. He is let go by his father and is set adrift in a world that he's not quite sure how to navigate. And
tell us how the Underground Railroad begins to come into the picture here, because that figures prominently from here on the rest of the book.
It does. So we follow Hiram, and he, through several individuals, finds out that there is this underground, and that they have learned about some of the qualities that he has, the gifts that he has, and
he might be valuable. He might be
valuable to them, and so it's so interesting because there's always, I feel like, this there was this theme coming up again and again with what exactly the task means, because I can't remember the exact quote in the book, but you find out that whether enslaved or free, everyone is under a task. And so he ends up trying to find out, like, he has these people who now also want him, but they want to use him too. They don't want him for his freedom's sake. They want him for what he can do for them. And even though, I guess in my head, in learning about the Underground Railroad as a kid in school, I always just assumed that every single one of those who worked on the Underground Railroad were heroes, or always were doing what they did for the best possible reason. But of course, the naivety of being young and not understanding humanity as humanity is, there's always going to be someone out there, maybe even doing something good, but not for the right reasons.
We'll take a break, come back and talk more about this intriguing book. This is not the easiest read in the world.
No.
This is not a beach book that you would take to Atlantic City, I don't think. It's kind of a think piece, but it's a challenging book. It's a good book. It's called The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates. And we'll continue our discussion of the book on Book Talk here right after these words.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
The Suck Up Theater at Butler County Community College raises the curtain for one of the world's foremost brass bands on Friday, February 28th. Tap your toes as the River City Brass Band Octet entertains you with a memorable night of American standards, pop, and classical music. Tickets cost $20 for general admission, $18 for seniors, and $10 for students. So reserve your seat today at bc3.edu/theater. Sponsored in part by Armstrong.
Welcome back, friends. Book Talk today. Peter Bess is with us, Assistant Director of the Butler Area Public Library. We were talking about the Underground Railroad, and I was mentioning to Peter during the break, there is a church in Butler that was a stop on the Underground Railroad for some slaves who were trying to escape to freedom. Covenant Presbyterian on East Jefferson Street.
Yeah, I had no idea. I think that's it's a fantastic bit of local history to know about. I'm going to definitely have to try to stop by and check out the church and see.
You can. I don't know whether they show it on a regular basis, but I know there are times when there's a space in the basement of the church, like behind a false wall, where they actually hid escaped slaves. Because that church was there,
right?
During the the mid 1800s.
That's so crazy.
And
that's wonderful.
It's still there.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it, so it's an amazing story.
Yes, it is. Okay.
Well, anyway, the Underground Railroad. The people who are involved in this, one of which surprisingly turns out to be Corinne.
Right. That was a twist I did not see coming.
I didn't see that one coming either. But so they think with his supernatural powers that Hiram could be a real help. And here's where some of these now begin to kick in. This is where we get a little bit of this fantasy, magic realism with something called conduction.
Conduction.
Is that what it is?
That's correct.
Where he is able to instantly transport himself to other places.
Right, yeah. They believe through the stories that they have heard about him as a child and his miraculous escape from the Goose River, they believe that he might be one of these individuals who has this ability, and they know of one other person currently alive who has this gift, who comes up throughout the book, and we are introduced to her with the name Moses.
Mm-hmm. Moses. It actually turns out to be a real person from history.
That's right, yeah. So if you've read anything about this time period and you've heard the name Moses, you know that this is a reference to Harriet Tubman, who ends up being a character in this book, which I thought was fantastic. I was super excited to find out that she was going to be a character in the book. And to see what Hiram is being held up to, having, again, grown up with the stories of Harriet Tubman through my education in school, knowing that she never lost anybody on the Underground Railroad, that she saved them, all the ones that she freed, she was able to bring to safety. So to all of a sudden realize that he was going to be compared to Harriet Tubman, and how would this character feel about that was interesting.
Harriet Tubman herself a slave.
Right.
Escaped. She was a staunch abolitionist, fighting for the elimination of slavery, the outlawing of slavery. And she was a key operative on the Underground Railroad.
Right, yeah, and not to segue too much, but the new movie, new biopic about Harriet Tubman just released on DVD the other day. So right after I finished this book, I was like, oh, now I can't wait to watch this movie to learn a little bit more about her character. So
I think it's called Harriet.
It's
right?
Just called Harriet. Yeah, it was a good film.
Title of the film. So anyway, that character appears, and now you understand why Peter and I were finding it difficult to categorize this book in one particular genre, because now you might call it historical fiction.
Right. Exactly.
We've got a real character here. There's at least one other real person who pops up, William Still, a person that I'd never heard of before.
Right.
He's an African-American writer, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had never heard of him either.
Mm-mm. But he has written about the Underground Railroad, which, of course, really did exist. Yeah.
Exactly.
But suddenly, Hiram is able to, through conduction.
Right.
I mean, he turns up in places like Philadelphia, for example, all of a sudden.
Right, and I don't want to give too much away on conduction and what it is and how it takes place, but he has this moment with Harriet where, if you're a Star Wars fan out there, you'll get she is his Obi-Wan. She is the one who gets to teach him about this gift that he has, that she also has. And it is, I am a fantasy reader. I would have to say of the magic systems that I have been introduced to over the years, this is one of the most beautiful magic systems. The way that conduction happens and takes place is supported by Ta-Nehisi Coates' poetic writing. It's just an absolute beautiful thing to read, and I actually listened to the audiobook, and to hear it read as well as sung by the narrator was quite an experience.
Also, the narrator sings some of the songs that I've read. Correct. In the book.
Yeah. So the songs that you will read in the book, if you listen to the audiobook, you will actually hear them sung. They're not long songs, but they are sung by Joe Morton, who is the narrator of the audiobook, and he brings such a performance to this audiobook, and he sings it, and then there's a time where conduction is happening, and if you've ever been in a church where there's a call and response happening, there's a part of the book where that happens, and I had goosebumps. It was beautiful listening to him read these parts as this call and response happens and as conduction takes place, and they are, like you said, transported from one physical location to another.
Always, this is connected with water,
right?
Hiram will have this vision that the blue light. There's his mother and the water dancing and so on and so forth, and that's how the conduction takes place. He has to first of all think of his mother.
That's right.
And there's an analogy here to something that I don't actually recall reading about. But then I must have somewhere in the stories about slavery that I had, maybe even in high school or undergraduate school, about slaves jumping from the slave ships into the Atlantic Ocean rather than
being taken away from home and put in slavery. Yeah,
in America, and the fact that they felt like they were liberating themselves,
right,
instead of feeling that they were jumping to their death, they would jump in and be happy.
That's right. They were jumping to their freedom, right?
And thinking that they were going back to Africa, and maybe they were.
Right. So yeah,
in their minds, that's the point that Coates is making here, and I think that's why he uses this water as necessary conduit for conduction.
Right. Yeah. As you learn about conduction, it brings the title again of the book into a whole new light, The Water Dancer. Up until the point of the revelation of what conduction is, the water dancer is his mother. It's the ladies who dance with the jug of water on their head. Mm. And yet we find out Hiram's going to be a water dancer as well.
Well, we won't go too far into that. I have one more break, I think. Do I not? Okay, we'll take that. We'll come back and chat for, we could talk for a while yet on this intriguing and interesting and different book, The Water Dancer. Back to wrap up our conversation with Peter here on It's Your Turn on WISR after these words.
Plan ahead. We've all learned from experience that living day to day can lead to too many last minute surprises. Surprises that are often difficult and frustrating to handle. And so it is with a funeral. Planning a proper funeral takes pre-planning, so that during periods of grieving and turmoil, you'll want those arrangements to already be taken care of. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler has been pre-planning funerals for more than 90 years, and the third generation of the same family is here to help you with that planning process now. Make these choices now. The funeral service, the choice of caskets, which minister, priest, or rabbi, cremation, visitations, flowers, church service or not, all these decisions can be made now before your emotions get in the way of logical and practical decisions. Pre-plan now with Thompson Miller. Think about it, and then call us and meet with us to discuss it privately. Call 724-287-3706. 287-3706. Pre-arrangements. It really makes sense. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Because we care.
Hey, we all know that Western PA weather is unpredictable, but no matter what the weather is, Battery Warehouse Plus has what you need when you need it. You'll find batteries for cars, trucks, heavy machinery, snowmobiles, ATVs, side-by-sides, and even hard-to-find batteries for things like hearing aids, watches, cell phones. They've got it all charged and ready to go for you. Plus, they carry jump packs to start any vehicle. We're talking lightweight to heavy-duty commercial-grade units. So stop by and let the pros of Battery Warehouse test your battery and alternator and clean your terminals for free. Battery Warehouse Plus, West Cunningham Street, Butler, or Route 422 in Katanning near Dairy Queen.
Talking about magic realism or fantasy in a novel, there are some South American writers who have used this, Gabriel Garcia Marquez among them. And there's a contemporary writer, a man from this area, as a matter of fact, Randall Silvas, has used this quite successfully in a number of his works. And we were chatting, Peter and I, during the break about how, in many ways, those who were involved in the Underground Railroad almost thought there was something magical about the way they were able to
right.
escape, almost something supernatural.
Yeah, something supernatural. I mean, so many people, again, you read about an individual like Harriet Tubman who, how in the world could one individual bring so many people to freedom and bring them safely through the hundreds of miles that had to be traveled, being chased by humans and dogs and everyone trying to capture them. So yeah, he, you know, Ta-Nehisi Coates in interviews has said, you know, he didn't feel like it was too much of a stretch to lean into that magic a little bit heavier in this novel. And again, I think it reads beautifully. Like you said, it's not an easy read. It's a challenge. But I think it's got a lot of really great lessons to teach.
Let me read you one sentence. I am not ordinarily a fan of really long sentences and constant subordinate clauses, but Coates can do it so well and with such vivid language. Folks, this is the first paragraph in the book, and if you want a hook to grab you, you know, it's like it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. But just listen to this, and I'm quoting. "And I could only have seen her there on the stone bridge, a dancer wreathed in ghostly blue, because that was the way they would have taken her back when I was young, back when the Virginia earth was still red as brick and red with life. And though there were other bridges spanning the River of Goose, they would have bound her here and brought her here across this one, because this was the bridge that fed into the turnpike that twisted its way through the green hills and down the valley before bending in one direction, and that direction was south." One sentence. Clause after clause, but how many beautiful things he talked about. The Virginia earth was still red. Have you ever been to Virginia?
Yeah.
And you go through a cut in a highway, the soil is bright red.
Right, that red as brick. When you read that, that was just it, again. It's so beautiful. It's so strong.
Yeah,
grounded.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Yeah, a lot of stuff we didn't get to here today. A lot of my notes, I guess I'm just going to have to save. But the name of the town was Starfall.
Starfall.
What an evocative name that is.
Right.
It's like you said, Lockless, the name of the plantation.
Yeah, again, he has this way with words and with really choosing. And I don't know, you know, it's something if I were to ever meet him in person, Ta-Nehisi Coates in person, I would want to ask, you know, do you struggle over finding that word, or is it just the word that comes to you? Because they seem so handpicked. And it's not just random words. It's every word throughout this book seems to be specifically chosen for it. And I just think that that's I think it shows a lot of care and a lot of detail and a lot of love for the story that he's telling.
Well, as often happens on Book Talk, an author with whom I was not familiar and a title with whom I was not familiar, The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Good choice, Peter.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it as well.
Good book. I'll let you take my copy and back and put it into circulation.
I will do that.
There are some listeners who might want to take a shot at it. Coming up next month, the book we're going to be reviewing, selected by North Trails Public Library, is The Giver of Stars by Jojo Moyes. I'm not familiar with that one either.
Well, hopefully you'll enjoy it as much as you enjoyed this one.
I'll have to get reading. Yes. Peter, nice to see you again.
It's always great to be here. Thanks for having me over, Dave.
Thanks for stopping by. Peter Bess is the Assistant Director of the Butler Area Public Library. That wraps up Book Talk for today. Enjoy the rest of the day, and hope to see you tomorrow at 12:30 for the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.